don't know about you, but I'm feeling a little intimidated because season one was so good. Now that we're beginning season two.
I really don't think you have to worry about that.
In what way? It wasn't that good, or you don't have to be intimidated? It's like, I have to consciously, like, all right, let's not be ambitious, because that kills performance.
I think you just have to go with it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Just gotta take a hit and
right.
Let's go.
Episode 13, Accept the Gift Already. In this episode, your hosts Steve, a jaded New Yorker, and Mal hurtle from point A to point B, making a case for opening oneself up to life's stupid, little, and quite possibly wonderful offerings. Strap in for The Ride to Redacted, Season 2. Listeners, please be advised there are occasional cuss words in these episodes. So now you know.
You have to be willing to risk abject failure in order to have success in what we do.
I'm not really worried about abject failure either.
Okay.
I'm like somewhere comfortably in the middle. It's
okay.
Like, we're cool. We're fine.
All right. So the Chill Award goes to Mal.
Yeah.
And it has to be taken away from Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You lose your honorary stoner status.
Yeah. It's always in jeopardy, let's face it.
Yeah.
What?
I was going to say, what did you do with your morning?
Not to contradict myself, but I felt like I chilled out a bit.
Yeah.
Chilled out. Not a whole lot. Didn't do a whole lot. How about you?
Just lots of writing, but...
Nice. Nice. I hate you.
Thanks. That's what we're going for.
Yeah.
It's a fun vibe.
Yeah.
For the podcast.
Well, of course.
I had my first day of school today, teaching.
Oh, right, right.
Of the year.
And how did it go?
Good. There were some tears, but they weren't my fault.
I thought you were going to say they weren't yours.
I wasn't liable for them. Sometimes they are mine.
Yeah,
so,
but not today.
Not today.
Good.
As of right now, I have 19 kids. That can
That's
change
a
little. Yeah, it's a lot. I have 2 teenage helpers, one of whom is 13.
That's also a lot. Okay.
It is a lot, but it's a lot in that he's quite young and still thinks of himself basically as incompetent. And so it's a real trial by fire for poor Caleb. I'm just kind of throwing him in it. But, legit, I asked him to write out some name tags for the kids based on the attendance list. He was like, my handwriting is bad. And I was like, bro, you're just going to have to do it, you know? As long as it's readable, it's fine. It doesn't have to be calligraphy, And well, I didn't snap at him. I was very encouraging. I was like, oh, you know, just try your best, whatever. But I was like, bro, like, well, I'm going to be asking you to do much more complicated things this year, and I need you to try your best.
Welcome to teaching, kid.
Yeah, literally. But, like, you know, the stakes are low for him. I know he's 13, so, like, hopefully he's fine. He'll be okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so I wanted to tell you the story that the guy told us.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, the guy.
The guy.
You want to do more of an intro or just?
Yeah, no, I will.
Okay.
Let me work.
Okay.
You think this is my first fucking day on the job?
I was waiting for the word rodeo, but fine.
anyway. So Mom and I just went to an estate sale. I got back from my first day of Hebrew school for the year. We had some lunch, then we drove like 40 minutes to go to this estate sale because she had seen that there was a lot of, like, you know, some cool stuff. And we made our way through the rooms, and we went outside because there was some patio furniture that Mom wanted to look at. And we met this guy out there. He was talking to this other woman. So the woman ended up leaving, but we stayed and talked to that guy for like 20 minutes. His name was Ghassan. He was from Lebanon. And he was telling us about, like, he came to New York in 1983 to dance, to be a dancer. And he was a dancer. He also, as well as being a dancer, self-described as an archaeologist. And I don't know if he teaches archaeology. That was my impression. But I think he also specifically maybe teaches archaeology through dance and theater and performance. Or at least that's his focus in terms of, you know, when he looks at a culture, he's like, that's, you know, what's most interesting and important about them. Which was pretty cool. And he told us a story about how recently, like not too long ago, he was living near the Met Museum in New York. And so he was at a coffee shop near his apartment, near the museum. And he was just hanging out there drinking coffee. And a young woman came and sat with him at his table. She was just like, oh, is it okay if I sit here? Because it was a small space. And he was like, sure, by all means. And because he wanted to, like, strike up a conversation with her, just to, like, have a shared life experience moment with this person who he was sitting with, he took out of his bag or his pocket an ancient Roman coin that he had with him. And she was like, he was like, look at this. What do you think of it? And she was like, oh, you know, looks really old. And he was like, can you guess how old? And she was like, no. And he was like, yeah, this is honestly not that old. It's 2,000 years. And she was like, whoa. And he was like, would you buy this for me for $15? And she said, no. Like, it's too much to pay for, like, a coin. And he said, would you buy it for me for $5, knowing how old it is and whatever? And she said, no, because it's too little. You know, I would think it was fake, you know? And he's like, so this coin comes from ancient Rome during the era when an emperor decided he wanted to live forever. So at the time, people were trading with whole goods. They were trading with, you know, a piece of copper or, you know, a piece of iron or whatever. And then you have some sugar and we exchange it and, you know, go about our separate ways. And before that, people were trading with shells, you know, just something that you could find that represented value or whatever. And so you had this emperor who was like, I want people to remember me, remember my face, remember who I am. And so he had artists come and make renderings of him, make sketches. And so he had many artists come, and he finally selected, you know, the representation of him that he thought looked the most like him, that was the best. And they had to make it into a coin. He got somebody to cast a plaster model of it. And then he wanted something on the back of the coin, too. And so he had the artist make a design, some words, you know, whatever. And they had hundreds of people working to create two molds, you know, one for one side of the coin and one for the other. And then they would heat a piece of copper, roll it into a ball, and then put the mold on top of it and hammer it down on it to get the impression on it, you know? And so every time they would do that, it would be a little bit different. And he was like, so this coin, you know, somebody dropped it. It got lost, buried in the sand and the mud. And there was a war. the war ended, and then there was another war, and the war ended. And eventually, one day, like, a young man came to New York. He got a job dancing at Carnegie Hall, and he showed us a picture of him, 1983, in a production of The Taming of the Shrew. And he, you know, got his paycheck, and he bought a metal detector, white metal detector, and he took it with him back to Lebanon. And he walked up and down the beaches, and he found this coin. It had seen, you know, generations and generations. It had seen love stories and all of that, and all of that it was just recording, sitting in the sand, you know, taking it all into itself, and just waiting to be discovered. And so he discovered it, took it back to New York, and now that man is sitting across the table from a young woman in a coffee shop, and she's saying $15 would be too expensive, but for her, he would give it for free, because it's meant to be spent. It's meant to be given. And he gave her the coin, and she, like, broke down crying, and he gave it to her. That was the story that he told us.
Very nice. I have two reactions.
Okay.
One, sort of fairly nerdy and not too interesting, probably, which is the earlier part of the story you've related is kind of a discussion of the early sort of development of money as a medium of exchange.
Yes. Okay.
But the second one is a New Yorker's reaction.
Yeah.
And I immediately put myself in the place of the woman in the story when he says, you know, it's a 2,000-year-old coin, obviously, you know, quite ancient artifact, $15, $5. And like, I'm the woman now, and I'm thinking, okay, dude, we're just sitting together randomly. We're in New York. I'm a New Yorker. I don't know you. Sure. I'm not giving you 2 cents for that.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
I think that's a pretty jaded reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, obviously I was having... Mom and I were having a similar reaction. Like, there was no, like, coin involved. But just talking to this guy... And I told you earlier today that that I think it's an important thing to buy into the little experiences in life.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And,
yeah.
When my friend Sam and his fiance Michaela just visited me, and I took them to see some sideshow, and they said at the sideshow, like, they were like, come see this thing. And it was very, you know, old-timey carnival vibes of, like, oh, come see the wondrous thing. We don't know what it is, you know. We'll pay you $5 if you can tell us what it is. Like, so I was like, hell yeah. And they were like, for $1, you can come see it. And I was like, hell yeah. So I paid my dollar over Venmo, and I went in the little booth, and I looked at the thing, and it was some kind of wet specimen of something. I don't know what it was. It could have been fake. I don't care. But I enjoyed in the moment, like, doing that. I don't know. It makes life better.
I agree with everything you're saying. However, I want to also say that, like the coin, I have provenance, just like the coin.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my provenance is living in New York and being a New Yorker. I don't know if you can ever say you're an ex-New Yorker. And having been conned. And so that's part of, you know, indirectly, vicariously experiencing this story. Better not to be that way, especially... But, yeah, I mean, you know that I've also taken great pleasure in contacts of that type.
Yeah, the Lubavitchers.
The Lubavitchers, yeah. And travel in general, and particularly when travel goes wrong, those become cherished little coins in your collection.
Sure.
And people. And obviously, I probably would have had a different reaction if I had heard the story myself. But suddenly I was like putting myself in the place of the woman and thinking, well, that would be why she would probably have said no. She would have been skeptical, like, okay, you're giving me this story. It sounds too good to be true.
Sure. Well, instead of a coin, we got the story. Right. And the story was told by this guy.
The guy.
Ghassan. And so, like...
Right.
You know, obviously it's his
story. The story is real.
It's his story.
And the story is
Well, the story is the way he told it to us.
Right.
So we're getting that perspective.
Uh-huh.
And I know that's a big... a big risk. Like, you could get fucking brainwashed into a cult or whatever if you're just like, I will blindly believe whatever. But if it's just a personal story about somebody's life.
Well, I think in all of that, I'm seeing theme.
Okay.
Theme of, which you have eloquently expressed, of open yourself up to possibilities. Don't be such a fucking cynic.
Yeah.
Steve. New Yorker, Steve, specifically. Meanwhile, we have to describe when we want to what we're seeing, like that motorcyclist ahead of us.
Yeah, there's a motorcyclist with a milk crate bungee corded to the back of the motorcycle with a Home Depot, like, whatever, 10-gallon bucket in the milk crate and, like, a broom handle or something.
He's wearing a kind of a...
He's wearing a flannel over, like, a hoodie and then a helmet.
Yeah, flannel, sort of scarf-like.
You don't think that's a hood?
Oh, it might be a hood. Yeah. Gray.
Yeah. Certain, very cash.
Yeah, certain raffish charm, which is always a good thing. Whether you be a motorcyclist or a 2,000-year-old coin, you want to have the charm.
Yes.
Otherwise, where are you?
Where are you?
Right, but, you know, so authenticity, being alive to possibilities, not being jaded.
Because, like, something that I've discovered as an adult is sometimes you fall into this mindset of, like, oh, you know, I don't need to do that because it's not practical or whatever. So, like, for example... I'm somebody who, if I'm by myself, I will basically never go into a gift shop. Like, if I'm at the museum or whatever, which, when am I at the museum alone? I don't fucking know. But anywhere with a gift shop, it's never me being like, yeah, let's go to the gift shop. But I'm often with Phoenix, for example, who's like, hell yeah, gift shop. And so I've become that. But I basically never buy anything there. Usually because at a museum gift shop, everything's fucking overpriced. But, like... but I do like, you know, those pressed pennies that you can get at the zoo where it like iron, like you crank the thing and it irons the penny out, puts like a little picture of an otter on it or whatever. I eat that shit up. I love that. So like something that's low stakes, I think as an adult, you need to break yourself out of being like, no, I don't need to. And just buy in when the stakes are low. You know?
I'm seeing this as very consistent with episode whatever of season one, not to get self-referential, where you talk about stupid art.
Yeah.
Like you need the stupid.
I think, well, this to me is not exactly the same as that. That to me is like, you need to acknowledge your stupid thoughts and follow them to their conclusion, because you will make something incredible if you do that. That will enrich your soul and the soul of anyone else who is lucky enough to see it. This to me is like, there's a little bit of like fairy dust magic in life that you could be like, none for me, actually, I don't need the fairy dust, just the regular plain life is good. But it's better if you say yes, you know?
Yeah.
You don't need it, but it's better if you say yes.
Well, were those little glimmering things in swamps?
Like
they see
fairy lights. I don't know.
Fairy lights, yeah, that kind of thing. There's another name for it. I'm not remembering.
Will-o'-the-wisp.
Will-o'-the-wisp. That's it. Will-o'-the-wisp.
Funny story, there's actually a will-o'-the-wisp in my novel. It's kind of like, it's just a little ball of light, but it like flies around kind of puppy dog like one of my characters, and it takes a shine to, like, her flashlight. When she shines the flashlight on the ground, it'll, like, dart around the flashlight light, and then when she turns it off, it'll kind of drift sadly around looking for it. And she's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, for everything we're just getting into and talking about here, I feel that I'm like jonesing to say the phrase, follow your stupid.
Yeah, you know what? Do it.
Okay.
And honestly,
follow your stupid.
I want to follow that up with this.
Okay.
Don't be embarrassed. This is something really hard for a lot of people.
Oh, this gets back to Caleb.
But I'm not afraid to look stupid. I'm not afraid to admit that I fucked up, and sometimes I don't cop to it. If I can get away with not copping to it, that's fine. But, like, sometimes I'll get on the train going the wrong direction, and I'll have to get off the train and, like, get into the station and go up over the tracks and then get down into the right side of the station so I'm on the train going the right direction. I've done this so many times. And, like, you know, it's usually because I'll automatically get on the train. I usually get on when I'm going to work, and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done that because today I'm doing something different. But I'm never embarrassed because the people in the station saw me fucking do that, you know? Or the people on the train saw me, like, jolt up and, like, run off the train. Like, I don't give a shit, you know? And you know what? They don't give a shit either. They're not thinking about me. I have the ability to turn that off.
Yeah, I think I also don't mind looking stupid. Obviously, I mean, I do improv.
I mean, we're doing this podcast.
And I picked up, now I'm on indefinite hiatus, but I picked up longboarding at the age of 56 or 57. I mean, if there isn't an opportunity to look stupid there, mm-hmm. especially when maybe your second time out, you almost run into a police car.
I think that might be the missing link between making stupid art and buying into the little things in life, is not being afraid to look stupid. Not being afraid to seem too eager or too enthusiastic about something, you know.
Or maybe even get ripped off. You gotta take risk.
Yeah. Listen, and if the risk is low, it's fucking worth it, you know?
Right.
Because it may pay off for you in that you get a story. Or, like, maybe you do have a bad experience. Whatever. As long as somebody doesn't steal your identity.
Like, a darn good podcast episode without knowing where you're going at the beginning.
Yeah, you have to, like, jump in a net will appear.
Jump and a parachute will open.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully. I'm not afraid to look stupid, but I don't always, like, invite it. Like, if people don't see me looking stupid, like, so on stage, it's, like, good. I love it. But sometimes those are the best moments.
Mm-hmm.
Mistakes are opportunities.
Yes.
Is the another apt words of wisdom from
Bob Ross.
Improv.
Eleanor
Roosevelt, inevitably.
Yeah.
Look, maybe
a
both.
Three-legged dog.
Why does it have to be either or? Yeah, the dog is.
Yeah, Eleanor Roosevelt was quoting Bob Ross. So.
As so often, one does.
Yes. That whole, you know, nobody can make you feel inferior without your consent. That was Bob Ross. Actually, it was incorrectly attributed to Eleanor Roosevelt.
No one can make you feel inferior without your consent.
I guess that is also on topic, huh?
It is, and it's good. Unfortunately, I've certainly given my consent at that. That was wild sound.
Yes.
I don't know. Well, I mean, we're getting there. I feel like the rest of this is just bonus, because I feel like it's like a... It's like a silvery fish that's, like, been grabbed, wriggling from a stream.
Uh-huh.
Think of us as bears.
Okay. And what is the fish that we've grabbed?
Right, okay. No, I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay.
It's just a fish. No,
half
this
a metaphor.
This episode, we've got one.
Oh, we fucking got it, is what you're saying.
That's pretty much what I
mean. Okay.
A little hubris, because we're not quite done with this drive,
mm-hmm.
but this right here, this what we're recording in a different context in filmmaking would be called room tone.
Room tone?
Yeah, you always only get like 10 or so seconds of room tone.
You're shooting,
done. You're shooting indoors so that you can use it for the sound editing.
So you can edit that out.
Because the quality of silence differs. Just like each coin is slightly different. But even in... I hope we didn't
look
pass...
Look at those fucking socks that kid is wearing. Holy shit. You see that? Those are whole loofahs. Can you believe they skinned 2 loofahs to make those socks?
Which kid?
The one with the fluffy socks. What do you mean?
I thought those were fluffy slippers.
No. Those are the socks.
Those are merely the socks.
Yeah. You have not even begun to conceive of the slippers.
We'll probably get another view. This looks like a wedding has happened here.
It looks like there's a wedding photo shoot happening. Maybe an actual wedding.
Reminds me a little of a Miyazaki movie.
I can see that.
The
day that they make a Miyazaki movie where there's a bunch of Orthodox women in sheetals crossing the street with strollers.
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't retired. Well, he keeps unretiring, so.
Okay.
Look at this. I won't say it.
You were going to say asshole, weren't you?
I was going to say a word related to asshole.
Okay. Hmm.
Jackass was the word. I won't make you puzzle
That's
over
That's so
it.
Polite. Look at this. Motorized scooter.
That's the kind of shit that makes
is
mom...
Is that Talus?
Yeah, those are our Talus.
And look at the gymnastics.
I know, they're just stretching out or whatever.
Was that it? It was a stretch, just a free stretch.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think you should hit him.
I was tempted to roll down the window and say, dude! But he would be like, what?
Not he wouldn't dude. Even, because he's jaded.
No, because like he's you. Orthodox. Maybe they don't say dude.
Bruh.
You know, on the one hand, the skater dude rapport. On the other hand, the...
He's on a motor scooter. He's not a skater,
yeah, but there was a move. He was in traffic, and he was,
but
like,
the move,
doing...
He was shredding. His leg.
He was shredding.
Okay.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the ortho to non-ortho divide. What to do? Listeners, chime in. I'm sure you're following exactly what we're talking about now.
Yeah, for sure. They got the visual element as clearly as if they saw it themselves. So.
Don't make me have to spell this out anymore. It'll kill it.
All right.
You gotta
leave
room for imagination. Yeah.
We're here.
Yet again.
We're at Redacted.
And when you're here,
we're back.
You're family.
And better than ever. Yeah. Walmart.
Is it Walmart?
I think it is Walmart.
Not Wendy's.
I don't think it's
something
Wendy's.
That starts with a W.
I think it might be Walmart.
Wollstonecraft.
I've never... Yeah, Mary Wollstonecraft jelly. And what of it? Anyway.
What's up? Sorry, you were wrapping up and I...
Yeah, I was trying... You were rudely not letting me... Help.
Okay. All right.
I love you.
I love you too. Get home safe.
Get home safe. Why are we shaking hands?
No idea. It was the orthodox.
Let the record reflect. My father just extended his hand to me over the recording setup to shake my hand as
good
I
talk.
Said.
I'm becoming British.
Get home safe.
What can I tell you?
Okay.
All right.
Goodbye.
Zygazot.
Oh, you want to pause it? Make sure we got it.
Oh, all right.
Make sure we were recording.
Or even turn it off. All right.
We were recording.
We got it.
Okay.